A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brialso Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care-to-be-great.
There we go. The other question. Undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
The Cut brought to you by University of Utah Health. At University of Utah Health, you get the same great care that the Jazz, RSL, and the Utah Trust. Visit uofuhealth.org for more information. Proud sponsors of The Cut. Dave McCann joining us on the program. Dave, it's good to talk to you, man. Thanks for being on with us.
Hey, I'm just glad to make the cut. I remember when I was in ninth grade, all of my buddies and I, we were decent basketball players.
Sure.
We tried out for the Orem freshman team.
And
everyone that was a certain height made the first cut, and that did not include me.
Oh.
And that was the end of my basketball career. So I had to figure out a way to stay involved and make money at it, and got into writing and radio and newspaper, and the rest is that. But it started with a cut.
Yeah.
That was devastating. All my buddies were on the team, and I wasn't.
That's
well, how do you feel today that you made the cut? Does it put pressure on you to perform here? Or
have you thanked that freshman coach for making that cut? Because
you did make the cut today. You're on the show, Dave.
I've moved on with my life. I got over it.
Now, Dave, you're a golfer. You're a member
I'm
of
a
the
bad
golfer. You're a member at the Riverside Country Club. Is there anybody that is as famous as you in the locker room next to your locker?
Ryan Smith is just a few over.
Yeah, there you go.
That's it. We're in the corner. And there are a few other guys in there, but
so is Ryan Smith.
His name we all know.
Is he famous because he now owns the Utah Jazz?
Yeah.
Or would he be as famous if he didn't own the Jazz?
Well, he'd be a different famous. He's a sports famous because of the Jazz ownership. He was a guru, technical,
right,
famous guy in the world of Qualtrics, and still is. But you know, now that he's moved into basketball, I think that's kind of how we see him. I always see him. Seems like he's got a Jazz hat on, and he plays golf there about as much as Danny Ainge. So I know they do a lot of Jazz meetings on the course.
Oh yeah,
well, that's where the best work gets done.
That's how you write off those meetings too. So, Dave, I do have some stats for you because the PGA Championship's up on the screen here. Former PGA Championship winner John Daly. Somebody kept a tally on all the things that he put in his body during his round of 18. Of golf today, so let's go over it. Take a I just want you to think about where you'd be at on this list.
Are we guessing?
No.
Are we gonna
yeah, let's do the guess.
Like how many things he put into his body?
No, not things. So I'll give you the thing. You tell me how many he put in.
Oh,
so Dave, how many Diet Cokes did John Daly consume over 18 holes?
Let's see. I'm gonna guess over a dozen.
It's exactly a dozen, 12 Diet Cokes during the round of 18. That's pretty good. That's only one every
– it's not every hole.
It's not even every other hole. Yeah. It's like one every hole and a quarter. Yeah, yeah. You're getting through it. Scott, how many cigarettes were consumed by John Daly during the round?
I'll say
– he didn't eat them, by the way.
No, I know. I'll say a pack and a half.
Well, give me a number.
Oh, I don't know how many's in it.
Well, give me a number.
I'll go. It's not that many. I'll go 15.
15 cigarettes. You were under. It's 21 cigarettes.
Oh my goodness.
More than one a hole. And
wow.
And then here's my favorite.
Okay, well, there's some par fives in there.
Those are lengthy.
There's only two of the holes.
A little bit lengthier.
Well, the par fours are pretty long.
How many packs of peanuts, Dave McCann, did John Daly go through?
So he's smoking and eating peanuts at the same time?
Peanut M&Ms. Peanut M&Ms.
Oh, peanut M&Ms.
Well, that's peanuts are very different than peanut M&Ms.
Yeah. How many
packs? How many packs of peanut M&Ms? Yes. I'm assuming they're the share size, not like the Costco bucket, but you know.
I don't know. I'm going to go 10 because I don't even know how you smoke and eat peanut M&Ms at the same time.
Well, you just wash it all down with the Diet
Kramer,
Coke.
Kramer did it on Seinfeld. And look, it's only six packs of king-size peanut M&Ms. So they only got through six.
That's not that many.
That is a crap ton of M&Ms.
Is that all he consumed?
Oh, how much water did he drink during the round?
So he was chasing the Diet Cokes with water?
I mean, I guess.
Well, if he drank 12 Diet Cokes, I guess you probably have 12 waters.
Yeah.
It was hot.
That's a trick question. He had 0 ounces of water. that was according to the person
that
who was following.
That up. Let me tell you, when I was a reporter in Vegas and the PGA Tour came through, and back when the Desert Inn was one of the three courses they played, my cameraman, myself, and John Daly, we walked nine holes with him, doing a piece on him, put a microphone on him, and he had his 2-iron and a putter and a cigarette dangling from his lip. I don't even know how it stayed on his lip, but it was just there.
It's dry
the
in the
whole
desert.
Time, and he just crushed the ball.
He killed it.
Yeah.
And it was like he wasn't even paying attention, and it just nailed
no,
it.
This is a guy
what
who,
a character.
It's a guy who that's a guy who hit 65 on his home course with his shoes off. So, you know, it's like it's a pretty interesting deal. I love watching these guys, but at some point they've hit a golf ball so many times, it's almost like when they do those trick shots where they hit them across the water there at the Masters and they're all doing it, you go, oh, there's something different here. Like, these guys are on an insane level. It's like the Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, the horse contest they used to have, the pig contest they used to have, on TV, because it's like they could hit it from wherever. Dave, we brought you on, one, because of your golf knowledge, and I knew you'd appreciate the John Daly list of things that he ate during his round. But
I did appreciate that.
Listen, BYU's got a lot of things they've changed up scheduling-wise because they've opted out of the Utah State deal, and Tennessee bought out BYU for that game for $2 million and are walking away from that one. And you know, BYU's got a lot of weird decisions to make going to the Big 12. What's kind of the wisdom going forward on these games? I know it's a game by game and a year by year and a team by team basis, but what's kind of the thought of what those out of conference schedules should look like for BYU over the next few years as they get in the Big 12?
I think we're seeing it where losing the Tennessee game was a bummer. I've been back there for games. I thought it would be awesome for them to come here. But, you know, if you're playing in the Big 12 or the Pac-12 or the Big 10 or whatever, to not have two P5s in your first three, that's okay for the coach and for what they're trying to do. And so I think we're going to see this one P5 and a G5 and an FCS, and this actually opens the door for that. It's the pattern Utah's been doing for a long time, and the question will BYU and Utah be the one P5 moving forward for each other, which I hope's the case once they get back together in a couple seasons. At least for the next five, they're scheduled out. But yeah, I think that's how it's going to be. And in the past, if BYU were to lose the Tennessee game, it would be devastating. But moving into a conference where you have all the benefits of being in a conference and having a 9-game schedule with P5 opponents eliminates that. For the fan, we're disappointed, but for Tom and Kalani moving forward, they're getting all the steak and potatoes handed to them from the league, and now it's, okay, what do you want on the side? You want Weber State, you want Utah, and you want UNLV, or Utah State for that matter. And I'm not exactly sure why that fell apart outside of BYU wasn't in a position to commit 4 years. I don't know if they wanted to commit 2 years in Logan. The Utes, I think, got beat up there in 12 or 13, and they have no business going back. It's not even on their thought process, and I think that's kind of how BYU is thinking too, is why would we ever go to Logan? And Aggie fans will hate that because half my family goes to Utah State, and I love that game, but why would you go to Logan if you can get UNLV to come to Provo or even San Diego State, who the Utes host this year? They're a legit G5 program. And so I think that's what we're seeing. But I was sure bummed to, you know, $2 million is nothing to Tennessee to schedule a game in Nashville, sell that thing out, and have a better shot of beating Virginia than they would have in Provo against BYU.
Yeah, with the college football playoffs where it is today, and you're a Power 5 school like BYU is now becoming, you have a legitimate shot at making the playoffs, and so your schedule becomes really, really important, and you've got to have some breathing room in there somewhere along the way. I'm curious what you think. You know, Texas, Oklahoma, they're clearly the marquee programs in the Big 12, but they're leaving. Who becomes that program or programs when they're gone?
Well, they're fortunate in basketball that they'll be just as good, if not better.
Right.
In football, I think it's, you know, there isn't another Texas in the country, and there isn't another Oklahoma. And Texas will still be a big dog in the SEC. That doesn't mean they're going to win. They can't even win in the Big 12. But as far as the biggest budget in the country and history and all that stuff, they fit in just fine in the upper echelon of the SEC. And Oklahoma, who's better than Texas, won't have that same, you know, thing going in, but they'll be good enough to compete at the highest level in that league. I think it leaves Oklahoma State. It leaves Baylor, and we'll see if Baylor can sustain what they got last year, which they hadn't had in a long time, but they locked in their head coach, and I think they're in for the long haul, won the Sugar Bowl, won the Big 12. Those two, probably. And that's why I feel like BYU's got a legitimate shot to go in and compete in the middle to upper half right away. I'm not saying they'll go in and win it. I think they can go in and compete in the middle to upper half as Texas and Oklahoma leave.
You know,
do you think really? Sorry, Alex. Do you think BYU goes in believing that they can actually win? Because I know when Utah went into the Pac-12, like they had a legitimate shot at winning the South title like their first year, and I don't think they really believed quite yet that they belonged in the program. I mean, do you believe that the BYU kind of sees itself as a real contender early on?
It's a little different with BYU and Utah because Utah went in cold to the, you know, one year they're in the Mountain West and the next year they're in the Pac-12, and they didn't have 10 years to build up. And BYU's had that as an independent. So I think that gives them a little bit different footing going in. I think middle to upper half is realistic. And if I were to say that I think they go in and compete for the title, you'd say, you know, I'm wearing my blue glasses,
but you always wear your blue glasses.
Middle to upper is, I think, fair. And they've been preparing for that. Even this season, they get another full season with a legit P5 schedule just to get ready for the Big 12. And Utah didn't have that luxury. And so the Pac-12 hasn't been great for a long time, and the Utes got in there and had a shot at it, but now look how they built. Now they're built to last. And I think BYU goes into the Big 12 having been built and need to get a little stronger, but they're not, you know, they're not coming out of their last Mountain West season and all of a sudden they got to go to Stillwater.
Well,
so I think that's a difference.
Just to make you maybe feel a little bit better, and that you're not trying to like just totally slant it toward the BYU direction because that's your employer. But we had a national writer on last week, and we were like, what do you think the expectations for a team like BYU should be going into the Big 12? He goes, win the dang thing. The best teams are leaving. I mean, like historically the best teams are leaving. Why can't you just plug yourself in there and just be in the mix every year? And I thought, that speaks to Scott, because Scott's big thing is he hates when programs go in and go, we just want to be competitive. We don't, you know, our goals are we want to be competitive. We want to, you know, we want to win our South Division. You know, all this stuff. It's like, just if you're going to go in there and you have all these guys and you have all this talent, and BYU, you could imagine if they could really put something special together this year. The problem is they're likely going to be losing Jaren Hall at the end of the season. And so that might be the biggest thing that will knock them down, maybe just a notch or two. You lose a starting quarterback, but they have a ton of talent coming in, arguably the best they've ever had. And they'd be coming off of three ridiculously good seasons, especially with this this schedule this year. I mean, it's going to be insane. So everybody else thinks that BYU should have a shot right off the bat. So why not? Why not? Why not BYU
fans?
Well,
I think that's what makes Baylor so intriguing for the home opener. Is they went down there and they got manhandled at the line of scrimmage, lost by a couple of touchdowns. They had chances to make it closer, and Baylor had chances to make it wider. But now Baylor comes here and they've lost some guys. And BYU has gained some guys and gotten a little bit better. And now they got them at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. If BYU can win that game, and then I think it gives at least BYU fans who are realistic something to go on with. Okay, that's the defending Big 12 champion. They were in Provo, and we beat them. So why wouldn't we be able to beat them every other year at least when they come back? And that's the conference champion. So in that light, I think September 10th is going to be really, really interesting. And then what BYU has not been able to do, which you guys well documented, is get through the season healthy, which is how you're going to have to be 12.
Right.
And so we'll see how they do this year. They're bigger, stronger, faster. And we've heard that before. I've seen it. I was at spring drills and know what they're up to. But can they stay standing how many people will be standing after Notre Dame and Arkansas in that 2-week swing? We'll see. And if they're in good shape moving forward, then why not go into the Big 12 and be a nightmare for every team that that you play, and every win that you get won't be an upset.
The massive back and forth that we've watched over the last 24 hours between Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, it's concerning to say the least for people who are college football fans, because it's shining a light on programs that most programs in the country are not able to compete with, not just on a talent level, not just on a national championship hopeful level, but with the money side of things. So when you see this back and forth that Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban have been having, and they've been throwing some numbers around, and you heard Nick Saban say that they had 25 guys share about $3 million last year, not equally, of course, but that's an insane amount of money, and something that I don't know if BYU will, one, ever compete with or ever want to be like in that arena of going, yeah, we just throw a ton of money at these guys. What's the state of NIL look like after this bickering match between these two big, giant coaches?
Well, I don't think the church will ever let it come to what you just explained at BYU. That's just not in step with how business is done here. And NILs, to an extent, absolutely. They're legal, do them right. Benefit the athlete, but when you're starting to talk about this kind of money, that's just not going to fly here, and I think we all know that. I think the fact that those two guys are going after each other is an indicator of just how big of a problem this is, because those two, especially Alabama, they don't have to say anything to anybody. They raise the money they need, they get who they get, and they win typically year in and year out. If they lose, it's usually in the championship game. Or so it feels. So the fact that Saban is talking about A&M buying all their players, I just wonder what the Monopoly board looks like at their level compared to the ones that everyone else is playing. But it has to be off the charts, and there has to be a big problem.
It's just as concerning, too, because then you go, well, then nobody has a shot. It's only going to be these guys.
I think Nick Saban was talking to his own people saying, we need to step up our game here. We can't let Texas A&M.
Let's go. Let's make
because they really technically can't get involved in it, and it's got to be outside of the coaches in the school's hands.
But let's be honest, most teams don't have a shot. And
That's true. The
same group of teams are the ones that are playing and have been playing for a while, and every now and then one will sneak in. But you know, Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, occasionally. Clemson, I guess Clemson's been in there too, but it's usually the same group of six that play in the group of four, and everyone else is really, really good and almost there. Had the greatest season ever if you're Cincinnati and almost got there. But in reality, they're playing for their prize, and everyone else is playing for the next biggest prizes, like go to the Rose Bowl, go to the Fiesta Bowl, go to the Sugar Bowl. But the college football playoff is set apart for those teams. That doesn't sound fair, and it doesn't sound right, but those are the teams that have the players to get there, and they get there every year. So, you know, BYU won the 1984 National Championship. I'm not exactly sure the game is so different now. And I think Washington was number two that year, and look where Washington is. They're totally off the map. So that was so long ago, and it was great that it happened. But in today's world, BYU isn't playing for a national championship. They're playing for a shot. They have a shot, or at least they'll get a shot. Same thing with Utah. You can get close, but when you look at that group's set up to kind of feed themselves.
Yeah.
So when the king of that group's arguing about NILs, look out, because there's some serious money being thrown around.
And we're all looking and going, and we're all just laughing, going, that is an insane thing. We knew the money was going to be wild. We knew that those big programs and those big donors were going to have their way about being able to get that money to those kids. So
the greatest thing about all of it is, despite, and it's not over yet, but despite where it goes, those two teams get to run out of the locker room and play each other
yes.
in the fall. And that's must see TV.
Absolutely. I just said, I don't even need to see the game. Just show me the last 2 minutes of the football game, and then if they walk across the field and actually cross paths with one another with their opposing state troopers looking at each other, that's always my favorite with these kind of guys. So Dave McCann, you can read his byline at the Deseret News. And by the way, all the stuff we've talked about, if you haven't read the write-up about what Tom Holmoe is doing as well to try to get back to scheduling somebody else to replace the University of Tennessee on their schedule and many other things. So Dave, of course, is on BYU TV, friend of our program, and we love having him on. Dave, thanks for hanging out with us, man.
Hey, baseball tonight at 6 on the app. I'll see you there.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Dave's calling the baseball game down there at Miller Ballpark, so we appreciate it, man. It's cool. Baseball, college baseball is the best. So.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.